Sex Bob-omb, and we're here to make you think about death and get sad and stuff.
I hear voices, animal voices, the tremble of cool, the feminine of this soon, reaching my threshold, staring at the truth till I'm blind.
Fee-fi-fo-fum, it's time for a show. And tonight, we have Sheldon Higdon on the show. How's it going, Sheldon? And did I pretty pronounce good, your last name right?
Yeah, no, you get it right. Right on the dime. You got it.
Excellent. You never know sometimes. Sometimes it's a win. Sometimes it's like, how the hell did you pronounce that letter?
Yeah. I've had it said a few different ways before, but most of the time people get it right. So, no, you did good.
Yeah, well, it's pretty phonetic spelling, so
yeah,
not that difficult. I dread the time of her trying to do a Celtic name, or sorry, mm-hmm. specifically Gaelic. It's like, that is not spelt the way that you just said that. Not even close.
Yeah, I usually want to try.
Yeah, I usually say, you tell me how to pronounce that, and I will try and mimic it.
Yes, exactly. I would ask the person so I can get it close to correct as possible.
Exactly. Because, I mean, you want to be respectful
mm-hmm.
and all that stuff, especially in this kind of business. You want to make sure it's good. I have messed up a couple of people's names. And I usually apologize and say, oh, yeah, that's how we pronounce it. Good. Okay, I'll do it right the next time.
Yeah, I'm pretty good at getting names right, but my problem lies in remembering the name to the person. You know, I can meet somebody and literally minutes later forget what their name was.
Oh, I can emphasize with that one because I meet lots of people in my regular line of work as well. It's like, your name is Ralph. I know that's not your name, but that's your name in my head.
Yeah, I think it's just because my brain is just firing at all times, and so therefore it's like it just gets lost in the shuffle.
Absolutely. That's what happens when we're creative people.
Yeah, so, I tend to... then I'll ask my wife, what was her name again?
Oh. You don't even have to bother in today's world. You just say, dude.
Yeah. That's what I even call my kids half the time. Dude.
Yeah. The kids really love it when you do that, right? We won't
sometimes.
Go into there.
Yeah, sometimes.
So how long have you been writing?
A long time since I was a wee little kid. I started young. I still have a lot of this stuff. Of course, I've often thought about if I ever were to put out a collection to include all of that stuff just as a fun thing to do.
Edited, of course.
I would just leave it as it is.
Oh, okay.
Well, here I am 3 years, here I am, in third grade. Here's what I wrote here. Here I am in fifth grade. Here's what I wrote here, and then through my teens and all that stuff. And I have a lot of stuff over the years, but I've always kept it in a box or locked away, because I didn't have a computer, so it would always be in notepads and notebooks and just thrown in a box, and I keep it over the years until I got a typewriter, and then I would type stuff out. It's been a long time I've been writing, but I didn't start submitting professionally until 2008.
Ah, okay.
So, that's not too long ago, really. I mean, if you think about it.
Like 15 years ago.
15 years, yeah. But, when I was younger and I was in my teens, I didn't have the people in place to sort of go, here's what you need to do. Here's where you need to send stuff. Here's how you do that. I didn't have that. And I didn't get that until I was much older and I started just doing the stuff, figuring it out on my own at that point.
And it's not like we had the web around and social media.
Yeah, exactly.
All those things.
I didn't know, there was certain books you can get. I didn't, even though I would get magazines all the time and see stories in it and stuff, I still didn't know, like, well, how do you get a story to these people? How do you, and so I didn't have that sort of guidance or mentorship or whatever. So it wasn't until much later that I said, oh, here's how you do it. And then I could start asking people because we had the internet and stuff. And so then, by the time I was willing to, put something out there in 2008, I said, well, I have all this stuff, you know, I want to write, so why is it sitting here? And so then I submitted something, and it got picked up, and a couple hours later, I submitted something different to somewhere else, and it got picked up. So I was like, okay, this, nice. I'm doing something right.
What was your first thing? Who was it with?
It was a Shroud from Tim Deal.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cemetery Dance?
No. They're Shroud Magazine.
Shroud Magazine. I keep forgetting about that.
Yeah, I did submit to Cemetery Dance several times. I still have rejection letters from them. I have rejection letters from The Atlantic, monthly. I have even from certain men's magazines. I have rejection letters from them from back like in the early 2000s. When I knew I was starting to understand that, in the back of the magazine it says here's where to send stuff, and I started figuring that out, and then eventually I I just started sending more and more.
Cool. That's cool. I mean, what the heck's his name? Danny, what was your last name? I can't remember your last name.
From...
He does the artwork for a lot of the covers.
For what, Shroud?
Shroud, yeah.
Evan, or...
Yes.
Yeah.
He does awesome artwork. He did the artwork for my first book.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, I love his artwork. He's awesome. He's, like, great at doing all this stuff. And the guys at Shroud were always awesome. I mean, they were an amazing group of guys doing an amazing amount of work.
Yeah, they were. They were doing a lot of work, and they were putting out, good quality stuff, too. Really great stuff. For the short period of time the magazine was around, it was a really, really good magazine.
Totally. So, I mean, from there, now you've come to your... is this your first full-on book, The Eerie Brothers and the Witches of Autumn?
Yeah, it's not my first novel. I've written other novels that are in a box that I don't feel are, they're sort of...
works in progress still.
Yeah, well, they're finished, but they're just things that I just felt, this isn't going to cut it. It's a progress, and then until you get to the point where you can go, okay, I'm going to send this one out. Like training wheels, if you will, on a bike or something. But in order to get to this book, it took me to write. I had to write those books first.
Well, yeah.
You know what I mean? And so, totally. And that prepared me for this book, and so that's why this one was good enough to be bought by a publisher and given an advance and all that kind of stuff.
You got an advance on this one? That's excellent. Yeah. That's a good indicator.
Yeah. Even though those books will never see the light of day, they were instrumental in getting to this point. Now, of course, I've written, short stories, like 50 of them or so, and poems, as you know, and then screenplays and stuff like that. And then I actually have written some comic books, too, that, they're just...
We're going to talk about that.
Well, that came close. I can tell you a story about that one. It came really, really close on that one. But so I've written everything I can because I just feel like you're better well-rounded that way. You're better off.
Have you written your first million words yet? Do you keep track of that?
No, I never have. I know that whole thing. But no, I've never sat there and counted it because, include complete works? Do you include, partial works? Do you, know what I mean?
My understanding is it's all words.
Yeah, well, it is all words. It's true. I would say definitely if I had put a guess on it, I would say yeah, because I have a lot of stuff that's finished and just will never see the light of day. I have stuff that's, almost done, and then I just walked away from it. Doesn't mean I won't go back to it someday.
Exactly.
And I have partial novels. I have scripts that I've wrote, full-length scripts. I would have to say, if I consider all that stuff, by far.
So do you consider it as being works that you will come back to and actually do something with, too? Or it's there?
I do go back to some of it. I don't do it on purpose. But if I'm writing something, suddenly a piece from something I wrote 10 years ago, maybe even longer, just like a moment that I remember I wrote in something else, and I can go and pull that out of there and use that. And if it's sort of not up to par with what the current thing is, then I can sort of rework it and fit it in better than what its original state is.
Call it the polish off.
Yeah, but it's basically I'm taking, you know, a small scene or an idea that's in another book, and I'm bringing it over to this because it will work well in this kind of thing, you know. But I don't go back and go, let me take these four chapters from this novel and stick them in this novel so I can fill this one out more, you know, nothing like that. But there have been scenes and I'm like, oh, I remember I wrote that, and then I'll pull it out. And sometimes they work with the newer stuff or whatever I'm working on, and sometimes they don't, and I just leave it alone.
Cool. So who is the Erie Brothers and the Witches of Autumn published by?
Scary Dairy Press out of Virginia.
Cool. And have you dealt with them before? I actually don't know them.
No. I know the person who runs it. And so when I was sending it out, they said, well, let me look at it. And I said, okay, sure. You know, not thinking much. Because there was a previous publisher who wanted it before that, and I didn't go with that. And then, and so I sent it to these guys, and everything went well from there. And here we are. Which is good, because they did, excuse me, they really did a great job on it. They got, you know, they went out and got
an
artist. Yeah, they went out and got an artist. His name is Florian Garbet. He's from France. He's from out of Paris. And, you know, they had really nice layout, you know, and good editors and stuff like that. So, I mean, it was all around. It was really, really great. I mean, they did well.
So what's the book about? Let's talk about that for a few seconds. I see it's about Salem and in 1692.
Yeah, it's a contemporary horror slash bit fantasy novel where it takes place on an island out in the Atlantic Ocean, far from civilization, but part of the Massachusetts state, if you will. And it's about two boys who are twins, 12-year-old boys, and they end up discovering that they have these certain abilities, and then they find out that they're witches. And so, and they're dealing with their mother's death on top of all of this. And so they have to, in order to, they find out there's a bad guy in 1692 Salem, Massachusetts. They have to travel back to that time and stop him from entering the current world because he wants to control all magic. He wants to control the hidden ones, which are basically fairies and sprites and things like of that nature, the fae world and stuff. And he wants to control over the humans, of course, but he also wants to control Mother Nature herself. And if they don't stop him, then the boys have no future. They have no family. They have no friends. They don't have each other. And so they have to go back and try to stop this person.
So how much research did you do for this book to support it? I mean, you've got the whole Salem time period, and on top of that, the whole other realm, the Fae realm, fairies, and all that other stuff. How much research and stuff did you go and put into building that?
Well, I already knew a lot about Salem, or Salem Village, actually, is what it was back in the day. And I knew, you know, about witches and things like that. But, and I've always been reading about that stuff for a very long time. And then with Fae and stuff like that, I've always known about that stuff as well, but I didn't know it like as much as a lot of people, other people that I know who know it really well. So I did do a lot of research on that. And I also went to the library, and I can't remember the book. I'm probably going to mangle the title, but I think it was the Encyclopedia of Fairies or something like that. It's a really, really thick book that came out like in 1971 or something.
Ooh, was it a Brian Froud?
No, it was written by a woman. I can't remember her name. I have it written down somewhere. But I had that book for, I don't know, about 4 or 5 months. I just kept retaking it out, and I was reading it from front. And it was basically just an encyclopedia of every single kind of fairy.
Emily Wilde.
Maybe. I can't. I would have to look it up. But, yeah, so I read that, and I was just making notes the whole way through. And basically, my notes was I was copying every page by hand. And after a while,
you know, they have the internet now, and you can just buy the book online.
Yeah. Well, the book is very expensive because it's out of print. So if you find it, you're paying a good price for it. But I would definitely buy it at some point because I want the book, and you know I'm willing to pay, you know, $100 some for it, I guess. But for future reference down the road. But yeah, it's a really good book, and I used that for a long time. And then I went online and did some research, and then I asked friends who really know that subject well and asked them their advice and stuff. So, and that's how I sort of went about that.
Cool. Do you ever get bugged? I assume that both of the young characters, Horace and Edgar, according to what I'm reading here, are young boys.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you ever get bugged about the whole witches are girls?
No. Because... You know, they even bring that up to some point in the book.
Cool.
You know, they go, "Oh, you know, what about warlocks?" You know, they start talking
exactly.
about that.
Exactly.
So no, I didn't. I, you know, because I didn't want to have to be. To me, you know, I mean, you can which.
It's like warlocks, being a nurse.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I didn't want to have to like change anything for it. I just. Felt that that's what they're witches. And I have twins, and that's where these two twins came from. So, you know, they came out of the fact that I have twins. That's how these two twins came about. I mean, their names aren't the same as mine, but...
And do the twins do twins thing?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They have a certain telepathy, I guess.
A look, a glance, a word. Yeah.
Yeah. You know. They know what's going on with each other than more than we do. So, yeah. And so, you know, when I had them, you know, and they're wanting or, you know, wobbling around and stuff, I used to just think, well, what kind of adventures are they going to have? You know, cool. what kind of things are they going to get into? And so I thought, well, you know, because my original idea, which it didn't really stick to it, but this was my Hardy Boys. This was going to be my horror version of Hardy Boys. So instead of solving mysteries, they're going to go out and deal with, you know, horror things. You know, kind of like the show Supernatural or something.
Or 150 other shows that are similar.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, that was my intentions because, you know, I had some, you know, I was trying to, when I was thinking about it, I was like, well, you know, there's the Hardy Boys. I remember them. And, you know, and then I went out and bought some of the books. Found some of the old books and would read them, but then that whole idea sort of left me as I was writing it because then it sort of started taking its own path.
So not Scooby-Doo?
No. Yeah, which you know that would be a fun thing to tackle too in some different way.
Well, there is a comic book out that takes Scooby-Doo into a future wasteland apocalyptic type thing.
Hmm.
Which is kind of funny and amusing.
Yeah.
You got monsters and zombies and all sorts of shit.
Yeah.
So, the style of writing for this book, it's for a younger audience, right? It's not for adult horror with slash and gash all over the place?
Yes and no. Yes, it's for middle grade kids, you know, 7 or 8 and up. But when I say up, I mean all the way into adult, because when I wrote it, I didn't write down to the kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because when kids read, they usually read up a level or two anyways. And I didn't want to have to do that because I know kids are much smarter than that. So I wrote it as if I was going to write it for adults. But I didn't add gore. I didn't add, you know, violence and guns and things of that nature. But there are creepy moments. There are moments that could be considered scary. And things like that. And then also the themes that go through it are heavy. I mean, you're dealing with death, you're dealing with loss, you're dealing with grief, depression. There's even racism is brought up in it because their best friend is a black girl by the name of Lenore. And she's basically like the third lead character, if you will.
Well, in 1692, she would be pretty much not considered rest of the team.
No, and that comes up. That definitely comes up. And so out of the reviews that I've gotten so far, a lot of them mention how this book is actually, it's a great book for adults too.
Cool.
So yeah, that's good that adults are finding this book entertaining and fun, and they're you know, enjoying it too. So that's a plus.
Well, as some of my regular listeners know, I'm a fan of fun facts. Did you know that for Marvel Comics, when Stan Lee was in charge, he insisted that all of the writing to be done at a level of university-grade English?
Hmm.
Because he also did not want to write down just to satisfy that kind of medium, middle, lower type pandering or whatever language. Because, like, if you're a young person and you're reading because you want to read. And if you mm-hmm. want to read, you're generally going to read higher than what people expect you to be able to read.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and plus you're not sort of putting down the reader in that way as well. And also, if Peter wrote that way, it would have made the comic books taken less seriously.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I read comics a lot when I was a kid. They were an escape, and they were an ability to actually transport to other worlds and stuff. Mm-hmm. And if I was being written to... See, I'm not... Okay. Possibly an unpopular opinion, I'm not a Harry Potter fan. And one of the reasons is I don't like the way the books are written. So, I'm kind of weird myself. I started reading Dante when I was 15, because that yeah. was something that appealed to me. To read Harry Potter back at that time, I would have just really cringed at it quite a bit. So yeah, writing down, not good.
Yeah, yeah.
Writing,
yeah, no. Yeah.
Natural, yeah. A lot better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just write. Don't worry yeah. about, you know, trying to, you know, write to a certain grade level or a certain age. Just write, and then people will find it, you know.
Yeah, because, I mean, okay. So, I mean, how wordy do you get? Like, how many big words do you use and throw out there just to, like, be... obfuscating.
Oh, I don't. None. I mean, I don't. Okay. That's never something that I try. If I'm using like words that aren't used that often, if let's just put it that way, then I'm using it for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, maybe the character is a bit smarter than most kids, and so he's well read, and he's, you know, read the dictionary when he was a kid, which I used to do that all the time.
Me too. And
so he knows certain words, so he's going to use those words because that's what he's learned, you know, for himself. So, but I'm not going to use, I'm not going to purposely write, I don't, you know, flowery, you know, way of writing just so I can, okay, look at me, I'm writing, you know, really cool, you know. I just write, you know, I just write and I make sure that I'm writing to the audience that I hope reads the book.
Cool. So what the reason I was mentioning that is because I do write with big words, but for the most part, you can always figure out what they mean by the mm-hmm. rest of the words around them.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is how I learned a lot of words. So.
Yeah, it's the construction or the you know, the
context.
Yeah, exactly. The context is what you're picking up that word from, and that's how you get to learn that word because it's used in a certain way that you understand.
Yeah, because learning is fun.
Yeah, and if you're going to throw out a big word because you want to throw out a big word, and if you're not using it correctly, then it gets lost on the reader. And then they got to stop, yeah. go pull out a dictionary, look it up, go back and go, oh, it just meant this. You know, why not use this word?
We don't need dictionaries anymore. We can just do right-click.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I don't know. I find it amusing and interesting is the evolution of technology and all of that sort of thing. So you're taking your characters from a modern age and put them way back in a medieval time period where it's like, oh yeah, all this stuff, that's witchcraft. And mm-hmm. how do you play in with that? I mean, do you even touch on it or whatever?
No. When they go back, it's, I don't know how long it is. I think it's probably, you know, a good maybe third of the book or maybe, or I don't know, but they, when they go back, that's when it becomes more, there's, I don't want to say things to give anything away, but it's not like,
no spoilers.
You know, yeah. There's not a whole lot. I mean, it's not like all of a sudden they're in, you know, they're surrounded by all these witches, and there's, you know, that whole pandemic is happening. They show up, they meet a few people, and they get to where they have to get, and then there's a fight, if you will, and then on the other side of that, they end up having to go back. So it's, and it happens at night, and by the time morning rolls around, they're already heading back home. But the cover of the book, that's when that happens. When they go back to the Salem, that cover of the book is when, that's where that scene comes from.
And so the monster guy thing is Hex?
He's the main bad. He's a judge in 1692, but he's also a powerful witch.
Cool.
And he has to collect what are called the Four Seasons, but the Four Seasons are totems that hold the seeds of each season. And if he can get all four of those, then he can enter the present world.
I have a comic book for you to read.
What's that?
It's called Seasons. It's four issues. It's a miniseries. Each issue is about this one guy trying to capture the perfect picture of these destructive apocalyptic monsters. Each one's named one of the seasons.
Cool. That sounds neat.
Yeah, it's right up the alley here for that.
Trust me.
I read a lot of comics, and I get this a lot with a movie or a comic. Hey, you just said something. I've got a movie for that.
Yeah.
So speaking of that, do you have interest in any types of movies and stuff?
From me to watch, like what I'm currently watching, or I'm always watching something, it seems, and I also have a big backlog of things I'm supposed to catch up on as well. I have a show that I didn't even finish from. It's about 4 years ago. I still have like the last three or four episodes on my DVR that I need to go back and watch those last episodes. But
good show.
Yeah, it was a good show, but then it just got so busy, and I'm watching all this other stuff, you know. But currently, I am watching the Fall of the House of Usher.
Okay.
On Netflix.
Haven't watched that yet.
Yeah, it's I've only watched two or three episodes, and of course, I'm already liking it because I like anything that Flanagan does.
Okay.
Mike Flanagan. He made before that he did what did he do? House on the Hill or something? I can't even remember.
Okay. Yep, I know that one.
Yeah. Yeah, and then he did something before that, too. But he also has done some Stephen King movies that he did for, Netflix. So he's really good. And there's been some shows, too, that I watched that I really liked, and then Netflix is like, we don't need these no more.
Yeah, I hate when they do that.
Like 1899?
I liked that. It was slow at first, but then it got interesting and cool.
Yeah, it got really kind of strange and weird, and then they're like, okay, we're done. Like, whoa, wait a minute.
Yeah, they end in a spaceship. It's like, what?
You're going to end right here? Yeah.
And I know, I hate that.
Two? Yeah, and so...
Santa Clarita Diet?
Yeah, I liked that one. There's, three seasons of that, I think. I watched that. I just watched Totally Killer the other night.
I watched that a week or two ago, and it's like, that's fun. I like her.
I liked her and Sabrina, which I loved that show.
Yes.
And they got rid of that. Man, that one really upset me because I liked that show a lot because it was really cool.
Did you ever try a show called The OA?
The OA? No.
If you like weird and freaky, and if you're watching a couple of the ones that you've just mentioned, check that one out. It's only two seasons. Same thing. Ends with like, damn it! I want more seasons.
Yeah. Yeah. But Sabrina was a really, really cool show.
I loved season one, and then I kind of dropped off a little bit on season two and three. But it was a good show. I liked her.
Yeah,
I liked the crew.
Yeah, and then they had a little mini Christmas episode too. They came out to hold people over. I think between season two and three, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I'm trying to watch. I watched No One Will Save You.
I'm not familiar with that one.
It's on, I might be wrong, but I want to say Hulu or Netflix or Hulu.
That would be why I'm not familiar with it if it's on Hulu.
Okay. It's basically, an alien horror film, where a girl has to sort of fend her house off from aliens, but there's no dialogue in the movie until the very end of the movie. So But you're on her a lot, so it's a lot of action, you know, a lot of spooky parts in that. So you don't realize that there's no dialogue, you know, because it's always constantly going. So you don't have time to let up, and so it's a good, really good movie. It's really well made.
And it was a Hulu release.
I want to say yeah, but I could be wrong.
I looked it up.
Oh, okay. So yeah, that's probably why then.
I have the Google skills. Plus, and I like to know things.
On Hulu, there's also another show that I like. Not, I don't think everybody likes it, but I like it. It's called Only Murders in the Building with Steve Martin and
I've seen and the Martin first Short. Season. That was a fun show.
Yeah, and now they're on season 3, I think. I've watched a few episodes. I've yet to sort of finish it up, but I like that show. I think it's fun, you know.
And, it's cute. And
yeah, it's different, you know.
It's got a lot of dark elements, but it's cute and fun. I mean, Steve Martin and Martin Short and what's her face?
Selena Gomez.
They make a really good ensemble trio cast or whatever, because they really feed on each other.
Yeah, well, especially Martin Short and Steve Martin, because they've been together for so long. You know, they go on tour together, and you know, so
like
yeah,
married.
It's a really good show, and I like it a lot. You know, I like the mystery element of it, and I like they're doing the podcast and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah, and there's also so many different things you can play on that.
Mm-hmm.
So are you doing any of the 31 movies for the month of October scary season?
No, just because this month has been busy for me with the book and all. Like, for instance, tomorrow morning, I gotta be out on the road at 7 in the morning, go to Ohio. I got to be at a middle school around 12:30 and talk to middle school classes. And then later in the evening, I have a thing at a library, assigning and a reading and, Q&A and stuff like that. And then I got to come back Friday morning, 8 in the morning, get here. Pick up my kids from school, and then Saturday, then I have a signing on Saturday from like noon to 2, and then I have a signing with Brian Keene and a couple other people at an event called Brownsville Screams from 3 to 10, and then Sunday I got another signing, so I haven't had time to really, sit there and go, well, okay, I'm going to watch a movie every night for the next 31 days. I've done that in the past, but I've also done it in the past just on any other month too, so
well yeah. I get a kick out of the fact that a lot of people say, oh, it's Halloween month, watch something scary. It's like, no, I watch scary shit all the time.
Yeah, I know, but I get it, because it makes it more fun, you know, especially if you can get other people involved and you can talk about it, you know, and stuff like that, and try to do it as a group of a few friends and stuff, which I've done that too in the past.
And if you can follow a theme,
if you can sort of figure out a little idea that you want to, you know, what kind of movies you want to run through from beginning to end, and that makes it a little bit more fun too, because then the next year you can try to figure out something different.
Yeah, last year I did 20 years of horror, picked each year one movie from each year of the last two decades, which was an interesting way to go, because you start with the 80s or the 70s, I can't remember which, you watch these movies and it's like, there's a world of difference here. This year I tried to do just the franchises and the evolution of a franchise. So starting with The Omen, it was cool because you watch the original Omen. It's like, I did not know there were 5 Omen movies.
Yeah.
They should have just stopped at 3, but whatever. So I will talk about all those later. So not in this show, because that's not what we're talking about today.
Yeah, you could do the same thing with slasher films, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Start off with, like, Black Christmas, you know, and whatnot, which came out, like, in, I think 74 or something.
And was banned somewhere for a little while.
Well, you know, the funny thing...
one scene.
The funny thing is that Black Christmas was made by Canadian Bob Clark.
Yes, it was.
Who made Porky's.
Yep.
Who made... Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things,
which is the horror movie that got me into watching horror movies.
Yep. And then he made Death's Dream, which is a really cool film. And then he was offered to make this one movie. He's the only reason he said he would do this because he wanted to make another movie. Now, I can't remember what the other movie he wanted to make was, but he had to make this movie in order to make that movie. And this movie turned out to be A Christmas Story. He made that too. He directed that.
A Christmas so a Story? The one with the kid?
Yeah. He was the director of that movie.
I hate that movie.
Yeah. But a lot
my
of people
parents
don't
made
realize.
Me watch that movie.
Yeah. He here's this guy who's made all these horror films that are, you know, that are really well known, cult favorites. You know, he sort of helped start the slasher genre, and that yet he made A Christmas Story.
Which
you know
does not necessarily track too far off, because there's a lot of violence in that movie. Don't shoot that or you poke your eye out.
Yeah, but you know, but it shows you his range too, that he doesn't,
yeah,
you know, like with Porky's, especially with Porky's.
I love Porky's.
But in Christmas Story, he's even in that movie at one point when they're outside and the dad's looking at the leg lamp through the window and a guy walks up to him, and that's the director, that's Bob Clark walking up to him.
Cool. So I'm gathering you do watch a few eclectic and odd horror movies as well.
Yeah, my DVD collection would tell me, would say that. Yeah, for sure. Because my kids come in, I have all the really crazy movies like in the back row of the, you know, nicer movies that are in the front row. You know what I mean?
Oh, you got them hidden.
Yeah, I have. I don't know how many I have. I have. I don't know. Maybe. Probably more than 500 movies, but I have, yeah, a lot of them are up so they don't see the cover or something like that. But
probably good for now, but they'll get into them later, don't you?
Yeah, well, no, I'll give it to them when they're older. So here, you can have all these.
What's the weirdest movie you've ever watched that in your mind is weird?
Oh, man.
Sorry, weird, odd, unusual. Doesn't necessarily have to actually be weird.
You got the guinea pig series?
I am not familiar with the guinea pig series.
Yeah, you'd have to look that one up.
I'm not going to, because it sounds like it might leave tracks that I don't want.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's... growing up, you know, really young, you know, early 80s, I remember being a kid and just loving the trauma films.
Yeah.
You know.
They got What's-His-Face coming back. Toxic Avenger.
Yeah, they remade that, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's, I don't know when it comes out, but yeah.
I'm excited. I want to watch it.
Yeah, you know, and you got like Cannibal Holocaust and Porno Holocaust and all these other. Yeah, so out of all the films I got, most of them are ones that you either can't buy no more or they're just kind of out of left field. Now, you know, once in a while, I'm like, hey, kids, look, I got Pixar, you know, so.
I got the same thing, because I got A Bug's Life sitting right there besides 25 Days Later.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like right beside each other. Well, you got that one, then the 28 Weeks Later, and then I don't remember what that one is, and then 47 Ronin, and A Bug's Life.
Like, yeah, well, yeah.
And then Abbott and Costello meet Frankenstein.
Yeah, I got a lot of Universal. I have some original VHS tapes too from the kids still. Universal Monsters or Night of the Living Dead and Day of the Dead and stuff. But then, yeah, I usually keep all our sort of Pixar Disney movies on a completely different shelf. That's usually in the living room, because all the my movies are, you know, I mean, you know, there's ones that have. Yeah, they're just, some are pretty weird.
Inappropriate for younger generations.
Yeah, some are just way out there and too gory and, you know, and stuff like that, and just, yeah.
Just all American stuff? Or do you get some of the other stuff?
Yeah, I got a lot of Fulci.
Cool.
You know, Brass.
Japanese?
Yeah, I have...
Splatter horror is some of the weirdest shit, but it's funny.
I have some of them. I mean, as a kid, I grew up a lot on the old Kung Fu films.
Yep.
I'm from the 70s and stuff. My mom would, you know, bring me home a whole bunch. You know, I wouldn't even know what they were, and I would just watch them. And then she always had those in horror films for me, because I was a latchkey kid. So I was home a lot watching just movies. And most of the time it was horror films.
Nice.
And she, you know, and it wasn't like regulated. She didn't go, well, you can't watch this one because there's blood. No, they all had this and that and this and that in them. Being a kid who can sort of survive on his own at, you know, 10 years old or whatever it was, making myself a pot pie, I think, I guess I was good enough to watch films, you know, where somebody's eye is going to get taken out, you know, or something like,
So you know, Evie in the chat room has a question for you.
What's that?
What would you let your kids watch as a starter horror when they're of age?
You know, it's funny because I've thought about that a lot.
The Brood.
I have like
I watched it last night.
Yeah, I have like I don't know how, but I have like four copies of that film, and I don't know how I got. And the problem is that a lot of these films are I have quite a few doubles, and the problem is that I don't remember I have it, and so I buy it, and then I don't remember I have it, and then I buy it.
This is why I have a database now.
Yeah, my wife did that for me. She actually went through everything and typed all the movies up, and then broke it down by directors, and she like went all like into it and made a whole thing for me. But
one movie that I have multiple copies of that I'm going to keep. That's Army of Darkness.
Oh yeah, I don't know how many copies of that I got. I got maybe 6 or 7.
I got 4 different copies, and they all sit on that shelf right there.
Yeah, I have a whole bunch. I had the one with the Necronomicon.
Yeah, that's the other one. It doesn't fit on the shelf.
Yeah, well, I had that, but the Necronomicon dried out and it fell apart.
Aww.
Yeah, so now I just have the disc. So I have the paperwork from inside of it, but I gotta find that somewhere on eBay or something. But as for the question, a part of me wants to lean towards something that I saw when I was, you know, I remember seeing, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street when I was 13 years old by myself in a movie theater, and you know, the owner let me in to see it for nothing.
Nice.
Poltergeist still resonates with me just for some reason because I remember seeing that. But you know, then I'm thinking, well, The Exorcist, you know. Like, that's a great film. And I'm like, that wouldn't be a bad starter film. You know, I mean, you know, it's just go out swinging right away. You know, so, yeah, I guess it just depends on the sort of subgenre of what I want to show them. I mean, because I got plenty of films to show them. You know, I can just tell them, blindfold them, and they can just pick one out, and we can go from there.
Well, I can't answer that question because no kids and not concerned with it. I watch what I watch, and that's all that matters.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, yeah, if you don't have a... Yeah, well, there was a time where I could do that.
Yeah.
You know, now I got to be more careful. But so I usually watch...
Hotel Transylvania?
Yeah, oh, yeah, we got the whole series.
I haven't watched those yet. They're on my list.
Yeah, I like the first one the best. But, yeah, we got all the Gru movies, you know, Despicable Me.
Mm-hmm.
And Cloudy with Meatballs and all that stuff. But I think the last movie I bought for myself was, it might have been X, I think, maybe, or Pearl.
Okay.
It's part of the three.
That trilogy?
You know, yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I think that was the last one I bought for me, but I have yet to watch it.
Yeah, I haven't actually watched any of the three yet. They're also on the list.
Yeah, the third one isn't out yet that I know of. I don't think it's out yet.
Well, it's still on the list.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So that's... Earlier you were talking about something which is absolutely something I go into quite a bit when I discuss with things with authors and stuff, is the whole marketing thing. So you go to a lot of signings. Is that a big part of how you sell your books? And how much of it do you spend online? Just besides podcasts like this... going on and actually trying to improve the experience for people.
Yeah, I try to do signings just because, you know, I want to get the book in front of eyes. Even if they don't buy it, you know, I've had people, you know, go, wow, that's a really, you know, really nice book. And then what's it about and all this stuff? And then, you know, they don't get a copy, which is fine. But now they at least know the book. And I've made stickers of the cover and stuff like that, so I always give them out too, so that way when you're at home, they're like, you know, maybe someday down the road they'll go, oh, I forgot that book, this, you know, I should go check that out or something, you know.
They put the sticker on something else and like it's advertising, somebody else can
exactly. So you might not get, you know, a million sales out of that, but you might get a few. So yeah, I try to do that, you know, and I want to get myself in front of people so I can talk about the book, you know, and they can ask whatever questions and stuff like that. So it's, you know, you always, it's like, you know, acting, you know, like you always want to keep your face in front of producers, you know, or casting agencies, you know, you don't want them to forget you. So you always want to keep your face out there, or your cover of your book for that matter. But you also don't want to do it to the point where you're just shoving it down people's throats, because then it becomes annoying and then people don't really want to care about it.
Exactly. So do you do a lot of online activity like Facebook, Twitter, or sorry, X, that sort of thing?
Facebook, yeah, because I get the best reactions and interactions with people on there, unlike X, which I get barely anything.
Same here.
Yeah, I just, that's something that I can never conquer. I don't know what it is, but I've never been able to really get a lot of interaction on that. And I also have Threads and Blue Sky and all that. And that's, so far, those are the same as X. There's not a lot of interaction on there. So a lot of it does come down to Facebook, because I do get a lot of interaction there. And it's nice to interact with people. I enjoy that part of it. So, yeah, I mean, so I just tried my best to get the book out as far as I could with what I had. And so I've done radio interviews in Ohio, two different radio stations,
cool.
Back in September about the book.
I saw that, 'cause that's why I reached out.
Yeah. And I did, you know, some newspapers interviewed me. And so, you know, that's just what I did. I just reached out. And I reached out a few, and then some of their other radio station and newspapers reached back to me. They must have saw the article, or they must have heard the other thing, and then they reached out to me. And so, you know, that's just what you got to do, really. You know, if you want to get your stuff out there, just don't be afraid to ask, if you will.
Yeah, because the whole thing is all of these media channels, they want content, and they want people who can talk. And it's like, yeah, talk about your thing. We don't necessarily know what it is, but it's okay. Talk about your thing so that we have some content about a thing.
Yeah, well, and that's with the radio stations. I was kind of nervous because I'm like, okay, I'm going into two different radio stations. I want to be in studio and you're live on the air. And I'm thinking, man, I hope I don't freeze up. But it's funny because it didn't bother me at all, because I just don't think of it that way. I mean, in the beginning I was, but when it came down to it, I didn't think of it that way. I was just talking to people. And they were talking to me. We're just having a conversation, and that was it.
Which is how I've always done this show whenever I've had guests. It's like, it's not about, I have a script. I need to stay to the script. I have some questions I have on a list that I will generally ask when I want to just whatever. But for the most part, it's always an organic discussion. It's like, hey, talk about this.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, if you, you know, like some people, they're like, well, I don't know how you could go on there and be live, because, you know, like, you know, thousands of people heard you right then and there. I'm like, yeah, I know, but it doesn't bother me, because I'm not there. You know, I'm talking to the person across from me. So,
yeah. Well, if you have a good interview, that's how it should be. It's like, okay, there's a microphone in front of your face, but that's all it is. It's a thing in front of your face.
Yeah, or a camera for that matter.
Yeah.
You know, and you're just talking. So if you're on a show and there's, you know, a million people watching you, well, you know, you're not going to be thinking about that because you're too busy talking to somebody.
Now, standing on top of a stage, brightly lit in your face, completely dark in the audience, but you know there's 10,000 people out there.
World difference. Even for me, that wouldn't bother me, because I don't mind talking in front of people.
Oh, cool.
I've always been the person who, like, if I ever had to do something in school and I had to do a science fair or I had to do something and I had to get up in front of people, I wanted to go first. Because I just wanted to get my thing done, but I also just wanted to get up there. And it never bothered me. I just didn't freeze and go, oh my God, they're all looking at me. I just did what I did and then, you know, went about my business.
Cool.
So, yeah, if I was on a stage like that, it wouldn't bother me really.
Okay. Well, that's good. I mean, that's an important trick. So, okay. And in that vein, I've known a lot of authors. And I find that about 50% of the authors are, I just want to write. That's all I want to do. I want to write. I don't want to promote. I don't want to do this whole stuff. And then you have the other ones that are very gregarious, outgoing, conversationalists. They put themselves out there. And that's how you sell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you, well, the thing with writing is that a lot of people need to understand that it's a business.
Mm-hmm.
If you think it's just, you know, you're going to write and I'm going to publish and that's all I'm going to do and that's it, well, then you're not looking at it completely, because there is a business to it. The business is your product. Your product is the book. Now, that doesn't mean it takes away any kind of artistic endeavor on your end. It doesn't, you know, take away anything like that. But if you want to make a career out of it, you have to realize it's a business.
And are you aiming to make writing a career, or are actually steps there?
Yeah, I think this book is definitely the first steps of getting to that point.
Cool.
You know, I'm already going to be starting a new book. It won't be the second book to this, because this is book one of a four-part series, or what I call a cycle rather than a series. But so the next one's a young adult novel about a 17-year-old. And so, you know, I'm already on the process of that. And then, you know, I'll get to book two of this. But I want to get to book two of this if the first one does well enough. I mean, you know, if nobody wants to read this or nobody wants to buy it and, you know, they don't like it, then book two is not really going to happen.
How have sales been doing so far? Have they been selling?
Number wise, I don't know. I don't. Oh, okay. That's the publisher's side of things. I really don't. I don't ask about it. I don't, you know, do anything with that, because I just want to focus on what I need to do and what I can control.
Promote and make more.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like my mantra's been, you know, it's like now is the moment, and the moment is now. That's been my mantra. I wrote it down on paper. Because I don't want to get ahead of myself and start going, ooh, if this happens then that could happen. No, I want to be in this moment right now. I don't want to be ahead of me, and I don't want to be wondering about what's behind me. I want to worry about right now and control what I can control. Anything else I can't control. I can't control if people buy the book, but I can control it right in the next book. You know, and I can control on taking people's, you know, thoughts. You know, because I always tell people that at signings, hey, if you have a moment, email me and let me know what you thought of the book. Because, you know, there's something that you liked, or this character, you hope this character's in the second one. You know, I can take that information and then, you know, use it if need be, you know. You know, just to make the second one even better. So... again, you know, like for me, the moment's now. Now is the moment. So I'm just going to worry about what I can control and try to create opportunities and hope that since they're outside of me, you know, they happen. If they don't happen, that's okay.
That sounds way too healthy.
Yeah.
Are you an author? You can't be an author. Yeah. That's a healthy approach to life. What the heck?
Well, only if I did it towards life, but I figured out how to do it with the book. So.
Oh, okay.
You know, so I'm trying to learn through this process as well, because I do want to make this a career. I do want to turn this into more than just a short stories here and a book there kind of thing.
Excellent. So in that vein, do you have a particular author that you look to as an ideal, as an inspiration point?
I could probably throw a rock at all my books and I'd hit one easily. I mean, there's so many writers that that I look up to, so many writers that I admire, that I think are just amazing. And so, you know, I mean, you know, of course, you know, everybody brings up King, and that's just an obvious point.
Who?
Because Stephen King, I guess I should say. But you know, because, you know, as a kid in the 80s, I mean, King was the man, you know what I mean? And so, of course, you know, my mom gave me all those books and then Poe and everything else. But, you know, and it's funny, too, because I found myself as a younger kid, I found myself a lot more like Poe than anybody else.
Poe's always been a good.
Yeah.
He's
and
a
that's
Poe boy.
And that's why I have him tattooed on my arm. But,
oh, okay.
But yeah, you know, I mean, there's so many writers that are, you know, out now who are kicking butt too. You know, I mean, Mayberry has always been really helpful and been in my corner. Jonathan Mayberry.
He's an awesome dude.
Yeah, you know, and a writer who's kicking butt now, I think, is really great. Is Gabino Iglesias. You know, it's just, you know, and I'm, and another person who blurred my book, Darcy Marks, she's really great too.
Oh,
she's
yeah.
really
okay.
been helpful. And she's she writes a lot of middle grade stuff. She has her second or third book just came out. I think her second book just came out. And Paul Tremblay, I mean, he's a great guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Every time if I have it, you know, he's always answering anything I have. You know, he never, you know, he's always replying to anything I have to say or, you know, hey, what's up? And he's, you know, hey, yeah, what's going on? That kind of thing. So, yeah, they're always all these writers are just they're great. They're friendly. They're helpful. You know, nobody's, you know, above themselves to help other people.
Cool. So you haven't come across the let's see, what do we want to call it? Toxic fandom. Have you?
No.
Good.
Is that a sign that... Okay, I didn't know if that was a sign that you
But
made.
It is a sign of success, yes.
Like, hey, I have a twisted fan. I guess I made it, right?
Oh, there's some people out there that are just like, what planet did you crawl out of from in a sewer?
Yeah,
I've
no,
heard
I've
about
never...
this one gentleman that I won't talk about or mention his name online, but he was intense and weird.
No, I've never dealt with anybody like that at all.
Cool. Stay lucky with that.
Yeah, that's a good thing, I guess. You know, the other day I discovered that my book is already on eBay selling for $30, and I was like, wow, I think I made it. You know, I think this is a sign that I made it.
That's one of the signs.
Yeah, so somebody already got the book and they're already selling it for three times more than what I'm selling it for. So,
excellent.
The publisher's selling it. Yeah, so I guess that's a positive thing.
But I do have to mention one thing that we talked about before coming on, because I haven't seen this book in ages and I found out we're both in it. Vicious Versus and Reanimated Rhymes. Zany Zombie Poetry for the Undead Head.
Yeah.
Put out by A.P. Fuchs.
Yep.
I want to pronounce his name right.
Yeah, Fuchs, yep. Yeah, I have my copies right behind me on my shelf. I think, as I mentioned before, I think that's 2011. And I did mine on, I paid an homage to George Romero with my poem.
Nice. Did you ever get to meet him?
Oh, yeah, several times.
Excellent.
We had some of the same friends.
Oh, cool.
So...
So are you anywhere near Evans City?
It's probably about an hour from me.
Oh, did you ever go to a convention there called Horror Realm?
Yeah. Matter of fact, I've been to Horror Realm, which is out. Actually, it's actually now closer to me in my
right.
where I live
I know they
in
moved.
South Hills. Yeah. Matter of fact, they're having a horror flea market on November 11th that I'm going to be a part of.
Cool.
So
people
think
can meet
November.
You there and buy your stuff.
Yeah, it's a Saturday.
Yeah, I know Horror Realm's a good convention. It's a small convention. I think I only went there twice because it is kind of another country for me.
Yeah.
It was like 2,000 people in the door, and it's like, this is cool. So you want to meet the guests? Go up and talk to the guests. They're not going to say anything bad against anything.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of, I guess it's more intimate because it's not super huge.
Yeah. Have you ever been to one of the super huge ones?
I've been to some big ones, but nothing like, you know, Dragon Con or...
Dragon Con's awesome.
Yeah, I've never been there. I would like to go there. You know, or San Diego Comic-Con, of course, is, you know, the ultimate
That
convention.
Is the big one.
Yeah. Nothing like
Comic-Con
those.
Comic-Con was just on this weekend.
Yes, yeah. I've never been to that one. I've never been to something of those sizes, but I've been to... A few, I guess, that are more medium-sized, probably.
Okay. And have you been a featured artist or whatever in any of those conventions?
No.
Yet. Yet.
No, yeah, yeah, yet.
Yeah.
But no.
Yet.
You know, maybe if I write an adult horror novel, maybe I'll get something like that, maybe.
I mean, YA. Look at Mayberry. YA horror is actually one of the best rates of return on fiction right now. It's in high demand. There's a lot of people that want to read it. And there's a strangled market trying to produce for it.
Yeah, I am. That's. I just like, you know, like, because the next novel I'm writing is a YA, but, you know, at first, you know, I considered doing an adult novel, but then every time I thought about it, it was always in a perspective of a YA. So then I said, well, I guess it's YA. If I can't get out of that point of view, then I guess it's YA.
Okay.
So,
well,
all I can say is it has the Grim Reaper in it. That's about.
Oh, he's a good friend of mine.
Yeah. So yeah, he's a really swell guy.
Don't
shake his hand.
Well, yeah. You ever met David Dunwoody?
Yeah. I remember David.
Yeah, his Grim Reaper is a little bit different.
Yeah. It's been a long time. Yeah, since it's been a while since I heard that name.
Yeah, he resurfaced on Facebook again recently. So.
Okay.
He doesn't get out that much anymore, but it's cool.
Yeah.
So, we're nearing actually the end of the show. How do people stalk you and find your stuff?
SheldonHigdon.com is always the best place to go. And I have all my various links and social media tags there. So if people want to go there, or you know, Facebook, Twitter, or X, Instagram, you know, even TikTok.
You got a TikTok?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, so I have my hand in, you know, just about every jar that's, you know, that's there. So so yeah, if they go to my website, they can find all that there, as well as my newsletter.
So did you join all 120 different social media platforms?
Probably close to it, but okay. I don't use a lot of them. A lot of them
I've only joined about six.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm on, like I said, Threads and Blue Sky I'm on, you know. But there used to be older ones that I was on that I completely don't even remember what they were called, and I wouldn't even know my password and all that stuff to get in anyways.
See, that's why you write that stuff down.
Yeah, I do that now. I didn't do that then.
Oh, okay. I used to write mine down on the back of business cards and just kept the business cards in a box. So whenever I forgot it, it's like, oh, yeah, there it is. Okay, cool.
Yeah, I probably shouldn't write mine in dry erase board. That probably won't.
So, I just lost a train of thought, and that's not cool.
That's all right.
No, it's not. That sucks.
Oh, earlier you mentioned comic books.
Oh, yes. So you started trying to do a comic book at some point.
Yeah, actually, a while back, me and Joe McKinney at that time, back in 2014, I can't remember what it was, but we wrote one four-part series. We got it in the hands of Dark Horse Comics, and it was a go, and everything was a go, and all they had to do, they even did some preliminary artwork from an artist who was going to do it, who went out and did the, remember.
No,
I know his name, but I can't remember. He did do Percy Jackson series, graphic novel series that came out a while back. One day on the news I saw that Marvel was getting the Star Wars comic books back from Dark Horse, and Dark Horse had them for like what, 25 years or so?
Yeah.
And so Marvel got them back, and then a couple of days later you get the email saying, oh, guess what, we can't, the comic book's just not going to happen, because they just lost a major piece of income.
Yeah, and then they lost right after that, more recently, Predator and Aliens as well.
Yeah, so, and that put the kebab, the whole, you know, just put the whole thing down, because now they didn't, you know, weren't going to start handing out the money to even, you know, new guys like us going into the comic book world. And so they became more choosy with what they were going to spend their money on, and so that fell through because of that deal. So
that sucks.
Yeah, we were so close, but, you know, that's the way it is.
But there are other publishers out there that are there's hundreds of publishers out there every month putting out material, and it's a wide range of stuff from just real life dealing with trauma, anxiety issues growing up, to the full on apocalyptic invasion of whatever.
Yeah. Someday I hope to do a comic book for somebody, because I like writing comic. I have comic books that I've written that are just sitting there in my, in my box or my computer and stuff. And I like writing them, so hopefully someday that will come to fruition.
Do you read comics?
Yeah, it's been a while since I've been been to the comic book store though. I just haven't.
Dude, support your local comic book shop.
Yeah, there's one that I go to all the time, but it's just been a while, so you're probably wondering where I'm at.
You didn't have a pull list going on there, because they get upset when you don't show up every regular period of time.
Yeah, no. They, they're usually friendly when I do eventually walk in the door. They're finally you show up.
So, what's your favorite comic book or a comic book that you enjoy right now?
I'm kind of old school, because I just went through all the comic books that I had when I growing up to see what I had, because I couldn't remember, and so I started reading through Spawn again. Because
Spawn is still going.
Yeah, I have like 100 and something, and so I'm like, man, it's been a long time, because I haven't those old comic book boxes you buy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I pulled them all out and I started going through them, and I'm like, man, I actually read these again, because I don't remember like anything, And then I have a lot of old reprints of Tales from the Crypt too.
Love Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah, and so I'll read those, and then I have these series of books that it came out with back in 2006, where they put a whole mess of reprints in each volume, and they put out like 4 volumes, I think. And so I have those, and so I pick those up too and go through them. But anything new, like I said, it's been a little while since I've bought anything, so I can't really really answer that one to some great degree. So
okay, well, that's fine. I was going to mention the one thing about the one you were talking about there. Oh yeah, Spawn. So issue number 1 is not the big value issue either. By the way, just so you know, I have a comic shop as well.
Is it 9?
No, 9 is the second biggest one for that first couple of hundred. Yeah. Cuz that's the Angela one. Yes. You heard about that, right?
Yeah.
Where they lost the rights to Angela?
Oh, no, I didn't hear that.
Oh yeah, go check that one out. So apparently Neil Gaiman was part of Image back then and wrote that character into the Spawn universe. And so it was going on for a long period of time. And then he came back to Image and said, dudes, I'd like to sell my character off to someone, because the IP or whatever, because I'm just trying to raise some money for something or whatever. And I just want to let you know. And Image came back and said, no, you can't, because it's our character. And he says, but you're a owner-created company, and I have a contract here that says it's my character. So he sued, won.
And so, yeah, I remember that.
Turned around and sold the character to Marvel.
Yeah, I remember that between him and
McFarlane.
Yeah. I remember them having beef together and stuff like that.
Oh,
yeah.
But yeah, so that issue cannot be reprinted anymore.
So what is the first, what's the one
the first appearance of Gunslinger Spawn, which I can't remember which issue it is, but it's around 120, 119, I think is what it is. That's like a $500 book in mint condition.
Yeah, I'll have to look that one. I'll have to look in my thing and see if I have that one, because I have to check that one out then. I'll have to bring it up.
Spawn has some spin-offs now as well. So you have a Gunslinger Spawn series, Scorched, and King Spawn. And these have been going up to like about 20, 30 issues already almost.
I'll have to check that out. I'll just see. I've been trying to catalog this stuff too as I go through it. But it takes a while because, you end up starting to go flip through the pages and you're like, oh yeah, wait, what am I doing?
Yeah. Oh, I don't remember this. And reading your 20 issues in, it's like, oh crap, that's 3 hours gone now.
Yeah, I have, for some reason I was going through my X-Men can't remember which, if it was it might be Uncanny X-Men, I guess, and I got to like 370, I can't remember exactly the number, like 372 or 373 or whatever, and some reason I didn't buy the next one, but then I have the one after that, and guess the one that I didn't buy was, I had the one before it and I had the one after it, but I didn't buy the one in the middle, and that's the first appearance of I can't think today anymore. Louisiana, the card.
Oh, Gambit?
Yeah, Gambit. Yeah. I can't remember what issue it is. Three something. And I'm like, why didn't I buy that issue that week? Like, I don't, you know, to this day, I still ask myself that. I'm like, what happened that week where I didn't go and buy it? Because I have all these before and all these after it. But I didn't, for some reason, I didn't buy that. And this is the first appearance.
Well, that's the way things happen. I mean, yeah. New Mutants number 98, the first appearance of Deadpool. Holy crap.
Yeah, I have the issue, was it 200? Is a Wolverine where he's killed by Deadpool. Has like a black and red cover. That one's worth like 200. It's like $200 for that one.
Yep. Well, New Mutant number 98, last time I sold that was like a $350 comic. Now it's a $500 to $800 comic.
Wow, not even being graded?
That was like a 9.2 without actual physical grade. Yeah.
All right.
But yeah, when you get to 9.8, it's like they get into astronomically stupid pricing. And it's like, I would never personally myself buy that book unless I had a lot of money already in the bank.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But yeah, no, that's cool. So I wanted to say thank you, Sheldon, for being a guest on the show. It's been an amazing discussion because we are now over time, which is okay because nobody's on after me, so I don't have to worry about rushing.
Well, I appreciate you having me on.
And everybody out there in After Raw Long, have yourselves an amazingly good time. Come back again every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on this same Bat Channel, same Zach Channel. Every Wednesday night, 9 p.m., tmvcafe.com. Just come back. You did it again. Again and 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 again until I get to the point where I actually can press the button for the intro extra song, which is at this one right now. And we go say, hey,